This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
ADHD is something we're hearing more about than ever at the minute. From social media to workplaces to classrooms, it feels like everybody's talking about it in some way. Diagnoses have surged in recent years, with more adults in particular beginning to question whether they might have ADHD. But with that rise has come a lot of confusion as well around what ADHD actually is, how it's diagnosed, and why so many people are facing long waiting lists just to be assessed or access treatment. To help us break it down, I'm joined by psychiatrist Dr. Fiona McDerby to talk about what's really going on behind the headlines and what people need to know if they think they might have ADHD. So first off, Fiona, thank you for joining me on the show. We've been hearing a lot about ADHD everywhere lately in the recent days and months and years. Are more people actually developing it, or are we just getting better at recognising it?
Well, I'd say the main thing is that people are not, I suppose, suddenly developing ADHD in huge numbers. You know, I would say that we're getting better at recognizing it, especially in people who I think have historically been missed, you know, like women and girls in particular, and people that have been quieter. So that kind of inattentive ADHD often would have historically been missed as well. And there's a growing public awareness about ADHD and the traits that are often aligned with it. So more people are presenting to services looking for an assessment as well. So I would say it's more so about kind of a greater public awareness, and that we as clinicians are also getting better at recognizing it, particularly, like I said, that inattentive ADHD, which wouldn't be the classical stereotypical ADHD that many people think of, you know, the person that's maybe has a lot of energy, that might be disruptive or kind of bouncing off the walls, that kind of quieter, kind of that person that might have been referred to as, you know, a daydreamer, or, oh, you know, he's away with the fairies, or something like that, that we would have said a while ago. So it's definitely a better awareness for clinicians and just the wider public.
It's talked about a lot on social media nowadays. I think that there's probably a lot of influencers in Ireland that have been diagnosed with it and talk about their journey, but also just people in general. But is social media helping with this awareness? Is it leading to self-diagnosis, though, on the other hand?
I'd say that both can be true. You know, I think that social media and platforms like Instagram or TikTok have definitely helped some people feel maybe seen for the first time. And I think social media and people talking about it online, they can introduce language and experiences that make people think, oh, you know, that sounds familiar. Maybe I should look into that. And I think that can be very valuable. On the other side, I think social media can flatten something that is very complex into a checklist of relatable traits, you know, like procrastination, zoning out, or being messy. You know, those things on their own do not equal ADHD. And I suppose if it's presented in that way, some people can maybe be over-identified. And that's why kind of a lot of people say, oh, I think I have ADHD. What I would always say to people regarding social media is that it can be a great starting off point in terms of curiosity, but it should never be used as the end point in terms of diagnosis, and be very careful about who you're taking your information from. So there is research that has looked into the ADHD content, particularly that is on social media, and over half of it has been found to be misleading. And of that information that is misleading, most of that is coming from people that are non-health professionals. So maybe someone that's speaking from their own personal experience. And again, like I said, that's okay to do that and to take information from that source, as long as it's a point of curiosity and as long as you're aware of that person and their background, and that they're not speaking as a mental health professional.
It's good to keep that in mind when you look at any content about your health. And the reason I suppose we specifically mention it about ADHD right now is because it's something that has been nearly become a bit of a throwaway term for so many people on social media, depending on whatever circumstance they find themselves in. What are some signs of ADHD, though, that people might have overlooked in the past, or might not be what they think is a symptom of ADHD. As we spoke about the whole away with the fairies concept that I feel like you were kind of taught or you picked up from other people when you were younger that was what ADHD meant, but it's not necessarily the case at all.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Nothing in isolation. Like when I'm doing an assessment, I'm always looking for a cluster of things. And again, I think in many people that sometimes I speak with have the stereotypical view of ADHD, and that is the combined type where you have the difficulty sitting still. You might have a little bit of the impulsivity, you know, putting my foot in things at times, maybe even the zoning out. But other things that are missed, I suppose, that are looked are difficulties with organization, kind of chronic forgetfulness, and even interoceptive awareness. So interoceptive awareness is my ability to tune into the signals in my body that say, hey, I'm hungry and I should eat, or God, my bladder is full, you know, I should go to the toilet, or God, I'm tired and I should go to bed. So what we know about ADHD is there's a difference with people who have ADHD in their ability to tune into those signals. So what that can look like is I can go a long time without eating because maybe I'm engrossed in something else. And then all of a sudden I tune into that signal. I'm like, oh my God, I'm absolutely starving. And then I end up overeating or eating past the point of fullness. And that can sometimes actually look like binge eating or binge eating disorder, but it's not. It's that misattunement with those signals. And the same goes for, you know, even my bladder. If I'm really into something and all of a sudden it's a mad dash to the bathroom, but that's something that's happening quite frequently, then that can be a very good indicator, along with other things of ADHD that people aren't as necessarily aware of. They say, God, my sleep cycle is all over the place. I always intend to go to bed at 10, but then something else catches my attention. And then I end up doing this and all of a sudden it's after 12 and I just can't regulate that, or I get caught into a series. And now look, we can all do those things. I can hold my hands up and say I intend to watch one thing on Netflix and I end up watching four episodes. So like I say, nothing in isolation, but those things around interoceptive awareness, some people actually do miss and can be an indicator for sure.
What actually happens during assessment for ADHD? I'm sure, again, it's the term that people are throwing around, oh, I need to get assessed for ADHD. But what actually happens during an assessment face-to-face with somebody? What should people expect?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's, so what should happen is that your first point of call when you have an assessment should be a long interview. So we're talking kind of 60 to 90 minutes where you're sitting down with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they're learning all about your history from your early developmental period all the way up to the present day in terms of your work, your relationships, your education, even your motor skills, those, your birth, everything like that, because there are many things that can look like ADHD that can mimic it that are not it. So for example, anxiety can look like ADHD because that'll impact on your attention. It'll even impact on your movement. If you're anxious, you might be more restless. A motor coordination difference like dyspraxia can also look like ADHD, you know. If you've experienced a traumatic event, that can impact on your ability to sustain your attention, but there will be, I suppose, differences. And the thing to mention as well is that those things can co-occur alongside ADHD as well. It doesn't mean if you have them that you don't have ADHD, but that should be the first thing, a really deep clinical history of your early developmental period. After that, if the clinician feels, you know what, there are enough things here that are, you know, suggestive of ADHD and can't be explained by something else, let's go ahead with a full assessment. And what that should include is you coming in to meet with the person in clinic, or you can do that online as well, where they do tests of your cognitive ability. So they're going to look at your working memory, your speed of processing, because we know that in ADHD, there's often a difference between those areas of the brain and how they function and the rest of your brain in terms of your verbal intelligence or your fluid reasoning skills. You also want to do a separate test of your sustained your attention. It's called a continuous performance test, and that's from about 15, 20 minutes, where we're looking at your ability to sustain your attention while I'm bringing in real world distractors. And I also want to get collateral information from somebody that knows you really well, you know, a family member, a partner, because those observations are also really important. And usually I'll be asked to fill out a few questionnaires. But what an ADHD assessment should never be is one interview and a questionnaire and that's it, because that's just not enough information or data to be able to conclusively say, OK, these things that you're experiencing are a result of ADHD or they're something else. So yeah, from start to finish, it should be taking about 6 weeks to complete an ADHD assessment at least.
How long should it be now in Ireland for a diagnosis if someone is waiting for one? I know that the waiting lists for the assessments and the treatments, they're, you know, they can quite be quite lengthy. Is that down to resource or is it just demand is outpacing the system in this case?
Both. It's both. So because people are becoming more aware of ADHD, they're presenting more for assessment, and that's great. But you're talking about a system that was already, before this increase of awareness of ADHD, a system that was already really stretched, you know. So if you look at like the public health system, if you're a child or a young person, if you're trying to get an assessment for ADHD, you're going to go through Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services, or CAMHS for short. Those services are already really stretched and under-resourced and not being funded very well. And so now you add in ADHD and somebody trying to get an assessment through that, unless you have a moderate to severe mental health difficulty, it's very difficult to get into CAMHS to get an assessment. And same with adults. You know, if you're trying to go through your local adult mental health team, which was already very stretched, it's near impossible to try and get an assessment through them. And if you do, you probably are going to go on a wait list within that for probably a year or so. So, which is unfortunate, to say the least.
Yeah, what needs to be done to help alleviate some of that issue there? Because obviously, you know, with awareness becomes demand, of course, and that's, you know, in one way quite great. But obviously, if there are a lot of people that are having issues and facing problems in their lives and they're being put on waiting lists, what needs to be done to alleviate that in an ideal world?
Well, in an ideal world, more services, more funding towards those services, more funding towards CAMHS, more funding towards adult mental health services, so that they can meet that demand. Because at this stage, it's not just a supply issue; it's also a planning issue. We know now, you know, that we've known for some time that the supply cannot meet the demand. And yet we're not reacting fast enough. And so I think more resources needs to be put into those services. More psychologists need to be put in place, or even if they're going to contract out to other services to do that. But, you know, that's obviously money. And I don't know if that's been provided to those services or allocated so that they can meet that. So they just don't have enough bodies on the ground in order to be able to do these assessments.
If someone's listening this evening and thinks possibly that they have ADHD from the research they've done or from what they've even seen other people talking about, what would the first step be for them, given the waiting lists and everything? You know, what should they be doing?
The first port of call, if they want to go down the public system, is to go to their GP, because they'll need a referral from their GP. If they're a child or a young person, they'll need a referral to CAMHS. If they're an adult, they'll need a referral to their local adult mental health service. With keeping in mind that the chances of probably getting into those services are slim, perhaps, and there's going to be a long wait list, and that's keeping in mind if that's actually provided within their locality. So for some services, they don't actually have a psychologist or psychiatrist in place to be able to provide that. If they have the means and the resources, then the first point of call, I would say, go private if you can. Go on to the likes of ADHD Ireland. They will provide a list of psychiatrists and psychologists that have been approved by them. You know, so there are many people out there that are providing assessments for ADHD that are not qualified. And that's where you get those assessments that are, you know, an interview and a questionnaire. And just do not give, all they're doing is really giving somebody a label, but they're not actually telling them anything about their brain and how it works, because ADHD presents very differently in everybody. You know, everyone has different areas of strengths and needs. So if you're going to go private, go on to the likes of ADHD Ireland, look at the list of psychiatrists and psychologists when you're looking to get an assessment. Or if you don't do that, if you find a website, just look at their qualifications. You know, make sure that they are they're a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and that they're listed on the Psychological Society of Ireland website. So that's the PSI website, because if you want to be reimbursed, reinsure for the cost of the assessment, or at least some of it, the psychologist carrying out the assessment has to be accredited with the PSI. That's what most insurance companies are going to look for.
Okay, perfect. Fiona, thank you so much for weighing in on this evening with us, because it is such a broad area that so many people are talking about and probably know very little about at the same time. So I really, really appreciate it. Dr. Fiona McDarby on iRadio's Group Chat.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
This is iRadio's Group Chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.